Dave Emery here. This is side two of For the Record program number 814, the National Socialist Underground File. This is being recorded on October 9th of the year 2014. Turns out, when this should come as no great surprise, that the National Socialist Underground was much, much larger than people had been led to believe. From Yahoo News of March 24th of 2013 is a Reuters story. German neo-Nazi cell bigger than previously thought. Skipping down. Of the National Socialist Underground, we read, but until now, officials have put the blame on a very small group based in the eastern city of Zwickau, Z-W-I-C-K-A-U. Then, quote, the new number is shockingly high, unquote. Sebastian Edathy, E-D-A-T-H-Y, chairman of a special parliamentary committee set up to probe the NSU, told Bild, B-I-L-D, confirming the list. Quote, now we have to clear up whether any of these people knew about the crimes or were informants, unquote. And that may be somewhat easier said than done. One of the, as I mentioned, one of the things that is most indicative of a will to cover up the NSU investigation and investigations into other Nazi crimes in Germany is the restricting of media access to the case. We're going to begin with another post from Germany Watch. This from Germany Watch of March 28th of 2013. Again, Germany Watch, along with GermanForeignPolicy.com, feed along the lower right hand of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. Again, Germany Watch of March 28th of 2013. Bavarian courts prevent Turkish media reporting on Nazi case. And this reads, in an apparent attempt to prevent Turkish media reporting on the full facts of the case, Munich's higher regional court released a list of media organizations that would be given reserved seats in the upcoming trial of an alleged neo-Nazi believed to have been involved in the murder of 10 people, mostly of Turkish origin. The list doesn't include a single Turkish media outlet. The court is claiming it provided accreditation on a first-come, first-served basis, but international outrage is growing. Turks in both Germany and Turkey are feeling left in the cold over a series of murders of which their community was the primary target. The trial of Beata Şape, a suspected member of the National Socialist Underground neo-Nazi terror cell with links to German intelligence, is expected to be the biggest in the country since the Red Army faction trial of the mid-1970s. International attention is expected to be considerable, particularly given the xenophobic nature of the crimes and the involvement of neo-Nazis. This week, Turkish journalists and politicians have been demanding a guaranteed presence at the trial. Many are asking why such a small courtroom has been chosen and why an overflow room with live video isn't being set up for journalists. One of its primary responsibilities is to ensure that the process of truth-finding takes place with the greatest possible openness and transparency. It is incomprehensible to claim that a larger courtroom couldn't have been found in Munich for the trial. Indeed, it is a shamefully inadequate excuse. It is entirely incomprehensible that it wasn't possible to secure even just one guaranteed seat for the Turkish media in the courtroom. Amen. And what we're going to see is later on concerns a possible reason why this particular court was selected. More, however, about the exclusion of Turkish media from the coverage of the case. Seval Ozcal, that's C-E-L-A-L, last name O-Z, C as in Charlie, A-M as in Nancy, the Berlin-based editor-in-chief of the European edition of Turkish daily Hürriyet, H-U-R-R-I-Y-E-T, writes, quote, "My newspaper, Hürriyet, called the court repeatedly before the accreditation period, asking to be informed of dates so that we wouldn't miss them. We registered on the first day of accreditation, and now we are told by the press office of the Munich Higher Regional Court that others were faster. How can that be? It is absolutely unacceptable that the Turkish media has been excluded from the courtroom. Many Turks aren't just disappointed, they are shocked, both in Turkey and in Germany." And it is not just Turkish media, but also apparently major German media as well. We're going to talk about that. We're going to right now access another post from Germany Watch, this from April 18th of last year, 2013. "Turkish deputy PM speaks out about German Nazi suspicions." As we mentioned previously, the trial of a neo-Nazi in Germany was largely condemned before it started, as the Bavarian courts had excluded Turkish media from being present at the trial, despite the fact that the trial concerns murders by the neo-Nazi group NSU of a number of Turkish people. The neo-Nazi murder trial in Germany does not have any significance anymore for Turkey, since the result is predetermined, Turkish Deputy Prime Minister Bekir Bozdag has said. That man's name, capital B-E-K-I-R, last name, capital B-O-Z as in zebra, D-A-G as in George. Continuing, "The ruling of the Munich State High Court will have no significance from now on for me," Bozdag told Anatolia News Agency, again quoting, "The court has not started the trial yet, but this is a court that ended the trial even before it started," unquote. Germany's highest court postponed the start of the trial early this week after announcing an overhaul of disputed rules on media access. Proceedings were to have begun on April 17th against a woman accused of being part of a Nazi cell blamed for 10 murders. But after Germany's top court ordered the Munich judges last week to expand foreign media access to the trial, its starting date had to be put back in a move victims groups called, quote, a catastrophe, unquote, skipping down. Bozdag stressed that there is an atmosphere that the trial is a show for, quote, completing routines, unquote. Again, this is the Deputy Prime Minister of Turkey here. Quoting Mr. Bozdag, "The court chief has lost his neutrality. You cannot expect justice from a trial whose head lost his neutrality. The trial is over for us. We are awaiting the result of a mere formality." And note the next section here. "We are waiting for confirmation of the specifics," Bozdag refers to. "However, as we mentioned previously, Germany uses this court when Nazis are on trial because members of the court are linked to the Nazi charity Stillehilfe," that's capital S-T-I-L-L-E, the second word capital H-I-L-F-E. "Experts on other concerns linked to Germany, Bozdag has called on German authorities to investigate claims that two recent fires may have been racially motivated." We have spoken about Stillehilfe in the past. That is an organization that was actually set up by the Third Reich during its closing days and has continued in the post-war period. It is inextricably linked with the SS, and one of the key people in Stillehilfe was Heinrich Himmler's daughter Gudrun. I believe that's her name. Anyway, it was Heinrich Himmler's daughter who was one of the principal people in Stillehilfe. And again, according to Germany Watch, this particular Munich court is used when Nazis are on trial because members of the court are linked to Stillehilfe. So here is at least one allegation of a direct link between the cover-up of this case and some of the underground Reich structures that were set up during the closing days of the Third Reich and then perpetuated in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. It is not just the Turkish media that have been shut out of the NSU trial, but top German papers have been left out as well, and that was taken note of by Der Spiegel in an article on April 30th, of 2013. Again, Der Spiegel of April 30th of 2013. Top papers left out. Court faces fresh trouble over press seats. And this reads in part, the Munich court where the NSU neo-Nazi terror trial is due to start on May 6th faces fresh controversy over media accreditation after several major German newspapers failed to obtain seats in a lottery of press passes. It was a second attempt to allocate seats after Turkish media had been left out in the first round. The Munich court overseeing the biggest neo-Nazi trial in German history on Monday faced new complaints over its media accreditation process when leading German newspapers failed to obtain passes for the 50-seat press gallery. The court postponed the start of the trial from its original date on April 17th to sort the problem out after the Federal Constitutional Court, responding to a complaint from a Turkish newspaper, ordered it to allocate seats to foreign journalists. In an attempt to be completely fair, it decided to raffle off the press passes. The venerable Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung and another national broadsheet, Die Welt, failed to get press accreditation in the lottery conducted on Monday. Die Tageszeitung, another well-known German newspaper, also failed to get a post. All three said on Monday they were considering legal action against the allocation. Publications that obtained seats in the raffle included lesser-known newspapers such as local paper Hallo Munich and women's magazine Brigitte. By the way, the FAZ, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, is generally regarded as the number one daily newspaper in Germany. Its exclusion from this is quite stunning. Die Welt is a conservative publication, but again, this is mainstream German media, and the notion that the FAZ, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, Die Welt, and the Tageszeitung could not get seats at this trial is stunning. And again, remember what was mentioned in the Germany Watch post, that this particular Munich court is used because it has links to Stillerhilfe, the post-war SS help or fraternal organization set up to aid Nazis and Nazi war criminals. One of the people active in Stillerhilfe was Heinrich Himmler's daughter. Another Germany Watch post has a very interesting working hypothesis, and the working hypothesis here is that the killings, the NSU killings, the National Socialist Underground killings, or some of them anyway, may very well have been to cover up people who were functioning at a low level in the September 11th attacks. Recall that the attacks were planned and staged in Germany. The Hamburg cell was under surveillance by German intelligence by 1998. There are no indications that they passed on their warnings. And I would also note that as we looked at in, for the record, 787, the notion that Tayyip Erdogan's government in Turkey is, quote, moderate, unquote, is simply not true. Erdogan himself is a product of the Al-Taqwa milieu and the Muslim Brotherhood. Bank Al-Taqwa, founded by Yusef Nada, an apparent German intelligence agent in World War II, had an account with an unlimited line of credit for Al-Qaeda, and there are also links running between the Al-Taqwa, very strong links running between the Al-Taqwa milieu and the Bush administration and the Republican Party, and people like Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, and Talat Othman, who was a director of Bush's Harkin Energy Company and was also a close personal friend and political advisor of both George's Bush. He interceded on behalf of the individuals and institutions that were busted in the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. Those individuals and institutions inextricably linked, on the one hand, to the GOP, and on the other hand, to the Al-Taqwa milieu. So again, when we are hearing of Turkish shopkeepers or storefront managers being victims of the killings, one of the things to bear in mind is the possibility that they may, and I say this is in a completely hypothetical sense, they may have been playing low-level roles, perhaps even unwittingly, in the September 11th attacks, and the possibility that German intel was, in part at least, sustaining the NSU, was to use them as plausibly deniable assassins to sanitize the September 11th links. A Germany Watch post from May 5th of 2013 is titled "The Neo-Nazi Show Trial and the Timing of the Murders," and this reads in part, skipping down. The German show trial for the National Socialist Underground begins this week after several false starts due to the Bavarian court not wanting interested press at the hearings. There is a strange coincidence to the dates and places. Murders number 2, 3, 4, and 5. The murder of Abdurrahim Ozudoglu, that's O-Z-U-D-O-G-R-U, on June 13th, 2001, that's again about 3 months before the attacks, Abdurrahim Ozudoglu was killed by two shots in the head with the same silenced CZ-83, already used in the murder of Enver Simsek, that's S-I-M-S-E-K. Ozudoglu, who worked as a machinist for a big company in Nuremberg, which company was that, they asked, had been helping out in a tailor's shop. The murder was discovered by a passerby who looked through the shop window and saw the body sitting in the back of the store. Next murder is the murder of Suleiman Taskopri, that's T-A-S-K-O-P-R-I-I. On June 27, 2001, about 2 weeks later, between 10:45 and 11:15 a.m., Suleiman Taskopri, age 31, died in his greengrocer's shop in Hamburg, Barenfeld, after being shot in the head three times. This was 2 weeks after the second murder and involved the same guns as in the first case, a CZ-83 and a 6.35-millimeter gun. The murder of Habil Kete, that's K-T-H-C, or no, Kalic, excuse me, K-I-L-I-C. On August 29th, 2001, Habil Kilic, K-I-L-I-C, became the fourth victim. Kilic, age 38, who was married and had a daughter, was shot at point-blank range in his greengrocer's shop in Munich, Rammersdorf. This was the first of two murders in Munich. The theory: are these linked to the 9/11 Hamburg cell? They all worked shop fronts, which are perfect for low-level intelligence messengers. They may have been supplying something along the lines of fake ID or paperwork or weapons, or perhaps they were just messengers or couriers for German intelligence or the Hamburg cell jihadis. The Hamburg cell also frequented an extremist mosque in Munich. Once the 9/11 operation was underway, German intelligence cleaned house. The, quote, NSU, unquote, vanished for 2 years, just a little over a week before 9/11, and no more linked murders in that two-year period. With no more linked murders in that two-year period. Repeat, the last murder was just over a week before 9/11, while one murder was in Hamburg and one was in Munich. If the NSU murders were normal far-right extremists sending a message to asylum seekers, where is the message? There was none. So, then 2.5 years later, in Rostock, Totenwinkel, February 25th, 2004, between 10:10 and 10:20, Mehmet Turgut, T-U-R-G-U-T as in Thomas, was shot 3 times in the head and neck with a silenced CZ-83 and died instantly. Turgut, who had been living illegally in Hamburg, was in Rostock on a visit and had been asked by an acquaintance to open up a doner kebab shop that day, the donors, D-O-N-E-R. He was clearly targeted and enticed to be there that day and time. This is not a random far-right killing. Because of Turgut's link to Hamburg, Rostock police made the connection to the third victim, Süleyman Toskoglu, thus establishing the term Dahmer murders. On April 6, 2006, just 2 days before the murder of Mehmet Kubasik, Halit Yozgat, Y-O-Z-G-A-T, became the last victim of the murder series. Yozgat, who ran an internet cafe in Kassel, Hesse, was also shot in the head with a silenced gun. On the occasion of this murder, an agent of the Hessian office for the Bundesamt for Verfassungsschutz Protection of the Constitution was present. Again, note this last sentence. On the occasion of this murder, an agent of the Hessian office of the Verfassungsschutz was present. The agent claimed at first to have left the premises shortly before the murder, but later changed his statement when presented with evidence of witnesses who had seen him present when the murder happened. His involvement with the case gave rise to suspicions that a German agency might be linked to the murders. When this BFV officer was investigated, various Nazi paraphernalia were present in his apartment, including some documents from the Third Reich itself, though it is not publicly known what these docs referred to. Is he really a Nazi, or is that being used to make out that he is an extremist infiltrator of German intelligence, that he was linked to the murder through his Nazi affiliates, rather than being present at the murder because he was working for German intelligence? Again, that's obviously a question being asked by Germany Watch. So again, were some loose ends, people working as couriers or providing low-level assistance to the 9/11 attackers being terminated here? Does that in part explain the links between German intel and the National Socialist Underground? That obviously is a question we need to contemplate and ideally answer, although I think a definitive answer unlikely will never come to us. Recall that in our visits with Daniel Hopsicker, we discussed the fact that Mohammed Atta and company were associating with Germans. A BKA officer, that's the German equivalent of the FBI, told him that Atta's associates were the sons, and in one case the daughter, of prominent German industrialists. So again, the German link to the 9/11 attacks is very profound indeed. I go into that again in For the Record Show 761. And indeed, a book published by a former officer of the BKA has suggested that this sort of funky behavior on the part of German intelligence and law enforcement has its roots in the failure to denazify Germany at the end of the war. We conclude with this post from Deutsche Welle of 2012. German police begins banishing long shadow of the Nazi past. A federal crime office investigation into how former SS officers remained at its helm well into the 1960s is well underway, providing new insights into how Nazis were reintegrated into mainstream society. The ties between some BKA founders and Nazis are no longer disputed. Skipping down. A total of 3 colloquia focusing on the role of ex-Nazi police officers who founded the BKA in 1951 and made up the core of its leadership in the 1970s was launched by the BKA in the summer. The agency has opened its archives to an interdisciplinary team of renowned researchers. The founding core of the BKA included some 48 members of the Nazi security forces known as the Reichskriminalpolizei or Kripo. They became part of a new criminal police force in the post-war British occupied zone, which later evolved into the BKA. According to Zierke, Z-I-E-R-C-K-E, of the 48, 33 had been SS leaders. Skipping down again. At the end of the 1950s, nearly all of the BKA leadership positions were still filled with ex-Nazis or SS leaders. According to Zirka, the police organization was rife with cliques and internal connections leading back to the Nazi era that helped with recommissioning. The BKA's investigation aims to examine the question of whether the Nazis' notions on crime fighting were carried on after the war. And skipping down again. But then came the publication of a book by a former BKA employee, Dieter Schenk, S-C-H-E-N-K, titled The Brown Roots of the BKA. The book argues that the organization had been founded by then-active Nazis. Whether the BKA founders were Nazis or merely careerists is something discussed in the Schenk book, as well as the current colloquia. Most important, according to Schenk, is his belief that the political leanings of the BKA founders can still be felt in its policy, quote, in the half-heartedness with which it has fought against the radical right, anti-Semitism, and anti-immigrant elements in the country. So again, at least some former BKA officials are arguing that the failure to denazify German institutions at the end of the war has much to do with this kid glove treatment being given to organizations like the National Socialist Underground. Please do use the SpitfireList.com website. All of the information up there is available for download for free. And if some of the things that I am saying sound strange, incredible, what have you, please use the research materials available on the website, and I think you will find that it makes a whole lot more sense than it does on the first go-round. Remember that I turned every program into a long article-length description. So again, if some of the presentation has been too pedantic, or if you would like to take the time to read the articles and the excerpts and even go follow the links to the original stories, go to the description on the SpitfireList.com website for each For the Record show, and you can do just that. This concludes Side 2. For the Record, program number 814, the National Socialist Underground File, being recorded on October 9th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.